Welcome. You're listening to Accelerator Avenue. I'm your host, Bernie Wolford. Our show is being broadcast live from the studios of Business Radio X. Thank you to Alan, our producer, and to all the host and staff of Business Radio X who continue to amaze me with how they use internet radio as an effective business tool to leapfrog the competition. Our show, Accelerator Avenue, is about growing and managing a business through the exciting yet challenging acceleration phase. A company at this stage typically has completed their startup. They are out of the garage and ready to scale to the next level of activity. Our guests include founders and owners of companies who are going through this phase, companies who successfully navigated these waters in the past, and also providers of goods and services to companies in this exciting yet challenging acceleration phase. Today is Hub Day, H-U-B, Hub Day on the Avenue, Accelerator Avenue. And I could spend the next 10 minutes describing the hub to you, but we have even a better plan. We have a founder and managing partner of the hub, and of course our first question to her will be, what is the hub? She has brought with her another member of her management team and also a member of the hub. When you find out what the hub is, that will all make more sense. But let me begin immediately by introducing Michelle Morgan, founder and managing partner of the Hub. She has a Bachelor of Architecture degree from Auburn and is currently pursuing a Master of Science in Architecture at the Georgia Institute of Technology. With 15 years of experience as an architect in Atlanta, Birmingham, New York, her underlying mission is to show how people can have better places that enhance our experience through thoughtful design. Her projects have included retail, university buildings, housing, city planning, and brownfield reclamation studies. Her current goal is to guide clients toward an understanding that design has the ability to reinforce and enhance their mission when a holistic strategy is built alongside the development plans. With Michelle is Mr. Lewis Perkins. His company is Newhouse Consulting, and he is also part of the management team of the Hub. Let me go ahead and introduce him. He is a thought leader in the corporate social and sustainability landscape. Lewis has vast experience working with corporations of all sizes on the subject of social and environmental solutions. As the former director of sustainable strategies for Mohawk Industries, Lewis created internal and external strategies and implemented new networks to assist the company in the desired result of increasing its corporate social responsibility and environmental profile. And last but not least is Mr. Ross Rankin, COO and co-founder of Trip Lingo, T-R-I-P, as in take a trip, lingo, as in language, Trip Lingo. Ross has worked in technology for over 20 years in roles from developer to sales to marketing, consulting, and operations. He founded Media Ocean in 1999, which he sold to DDS in year 2002. A veteran of six other startups, he holds a bachelor's degree in information systems and a master of management of technology. So we have a very impressive and very experienced group with us today. But let's begin by welcoming Michelle to Accelerator Avenue. Michelle, let's tell our listeners, what is the Hub?
Hi, Bernie. So the Hub is a space and a community at the same time. And what we do are offer membership to businesses that are in the incubator stage. And then once they come into the membership, we look at how do we construct relationships and create connections for them around all the types of resources that a startup business would need. So it's everything from, do you need an intern, to do we have a angel investor or a venture capitalist that we could introduce you to?
So the coffee shop is simply merely the beginning of the activity. So this is, as we've seen, you know, Starbucks and Caribou and others become the office, the virtual office for many people in our community, particularly those executives perhaps in transition. You not only offer that very core, but there's so much more behind the scenes. So tell us the first thing our listeners should know about what goes on outside of the physical, obvious workspace.
So if you took there's a reason people are sitting in those coffee shops. They're friendly. They are by nature social. They're a great place for somebody who's in that transition because it's not isolating like working from home can be. So if you took the collegial nature of that and the function that you need out of an office space in the early startup phase. So the infrastructure, a place to meet that's more professional than the coffee shop and doesn't have an espresso machine in the background. And you sort of smash those two things together, and then you put a bunch of other people in the room who are similar to you. They want to start things. They want to collaborate with other people. They're interested in how sort of changing trends in work lead to more innovation, faster innovation, things like that. If you could bring all those things together and put them in a place, that's what the hub is trying to do. So what's happening beyond the actual place is that connectivity of like-minded people and projects that are not necessarily in the same stages, but they're going through similar paths, and they're definitely in a similar thinking space about how to get to the next stage.
Okay. The words that jumped off the webpage to me were collision rich. I love that. If I want to lock myself in a broom closet and be all alone and knock out 8 hours of work, then I need to find a place to do that. But if I want this collision-rich networking, mentoring, coaching environment, it sounds like the hub would be of interest to me.
Ideally, what it is a really dense workspace also. So you've got a lot of people in a smaller space. Now, we're still in our first year of operations, so we're probably not as dense as we might like to be. But the idea is that by getting people who are working close together, not only are you running into each other at the kitchen, running into each other at the printer, and you're running into people who do things that are totally different from what you do.
Yeah.
You're also sitting close enough. So the guys that are in this space with us right now, you might sit as closely as we are. So Lewis is about 3 feet away from me. Ross is maybe five feet away from me or 3 feet away from me. You might be that close in the hub. Everybody's working in a sort of mostly paperless environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's all laptop-based and things like that. So people get a little bit closer. You overhear conversations.
Mm-hmm.
People catch on to phrases and things. And just a couple weeks ago, Lewis was sitting next to a guy named Danny in the space. Danny was talking about, I'm sorry, it wasn't Lewis, it was Jim Hackler, the urbane environmentalist.
The story's still just as good.
Yes,
there, right?
Just as good. They're both sustainability guys. I'm sorry, got you confused.
That's all right.
So Jim overheard Danny talking about needing some research about a particular type of sustainability for which Jim is an expert. And Danny happened to be on the phone. And when he hung up the phone, Jim just leaned over and said, I don't want to be rude, but you were talking about something I've got some expertise about. Danny said, I'm headed out to lunch. Let's go. They walked around the corner to a deli. Jim is now doing the research that Danny needed, which is great because he didn't like the guy he was talking to on the phone anyway. And he felt like this guy was right there. And he later asked me, hey, what do you know about him? And I said, well, he's a member of the hub, and this has been my experience with him. I think he's a great guy, and he's done some good work for us. And so it not only is a way to extend your thinking about your business, it's a way to extend your network into areas you probably wouldn't get into otherwise. Because Danny's a tech guy, and Jim is a sustainability guy.
Yeah, yeah. Eavesdropping encouraged.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
Exactly,
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about this wonderful transformation that takes place at night. While some other similar co-working spaces are turning out the lights and taking out the garbage. The day is just starting at the hub. Tell us about the evening activities.
It is. In addition to our working members who are there during the day, we have what we refer to as our sort of informational and events members. And so these are people who are either working in corporations or they are sort of entrepreneurial curious or socially responsible curious, however you want to say it. And they are looking for deeper information. So we put together panel discussions and active learning experiences and even just presentations on relevant topics that have to do with sustainability, entrepreneur issues, so mm-hmm. how people in those corporations are experiencing their own desire to be entrepreneurial mm-hmm. inside a heavily structuralized environment. There's also stuff around basic entrepreneurialism. We do a business plan review that we call the Burning Plan, and we assemble a panel of experts.
This is like the dungeon or the dragons, or who are these guys I see on TV, the British guys that...
I haven't seen that one. I've seen Shark Tank. Is it like that?
Similar.
Okay.
Similar.
So if you imagine Shark Tank, but nobody's necessarily trying to outbid the guy sitting next to him.
Okay.
So we stuck the bench with somebody in marketing, somebody in strategy, ideally somebody that has a gift around revenue generation and revenue streams.
Okay.
And some really good solid thinking around that. We like to have a communications person there, and they look at a business plan presentation prior to that going out to be pitched. But also usually in that audience are a couple of people who are viable investors. And we've reached out to them to say, hey, this is something you told me you might be interested in. And they're operating under the radar and acting like they're a critic, just like everybody else. But ideally, if they see something really good, they'll make an offer.
So this is way, way, way beyond the coffee shop.
Okay. Now.
Yeah, this is this is where stuff happens. I mean, good business stuff happens, particularly for young, emerging startup and accelerating companies. How cool is that?
There's two things that, when you say that, come to mind. One is that, so our business advisor or business coach talks to us a lot about the importance in current business being about collapsing time. So ideally, that's what we're doing for people. But the other way that I look at it is, one consistent method of learning across all ages and demographics is first you read about it, then you see somebody do it, and then you do it yourself. So ideally, that's what we're providing, is this window into the company that's just ahead of you. You're getting to watch them do some things. You're learning a lot more, a lot faster.
Interesting. Now, there is more than one hub.
There is.
And I thought, well, that probably means there's one in Alpharetta, one down near the airport, one in Conyers, maybe one in Douglasville. And then I looked at your locations, and it blew me away. Share with our listeners where they might find other hubs in their travels.
So I might get this wrong if you go to our website, because we're a pretty aggressively growing company. We are one of 26 hubs around the world. You can find us in Helsinki, in Brussels, in Zurich, São Paulo, Johannesburg, Oaxaca, Mexico, Halifax, Nova Scotia. Inside the U.S., there's right now two in the Bay Area, one in San Francisco proper and one in Berkeley. And then there's the one in Atlanta. So those were the first three here. And then on the way very soon are L.A., D.C., New York, Boulder, Portland, Seattle, Chicago, Boston, and Austin.
You've met or exceeded every definition for being a guest on Accelerator Avenue. What a growth story. And how, now, when we met before and sort of chatted, I didn't come away understanding the time span in which all of this has happened. But, it has to be quote-unquote recent.
A couple of years. I think the first hub opened in 2005. I know that the first hub in North America opened in Halifax, Nova Scotia in 2009. And then the two in the Bay Area, one opened in... what year are we in now? 2011? One opened in 2009.
Cinco de Mayo last night. We none of us quite know what year it is right now.
I've been busy at the hub. I don't know what year it is. one of them opened in 2009. We opened at the beginning of 2010, and then the second one in San Francisco opened in 2010.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty aggressive. And then we've had a big change in the last couple of months, in that the hub has gone from being a privately held company, which is what the original entity was, to a community model that looks like our community. So now all of the hubs own all of the hubs around the globe.
Interesting. Interesting. What a unique corporate structure. First of all, what a great story. And who would have connected the dots amongst all the international locations and so forth? But here you did it. Here it is. So.
I wish I could say I did it.
Well, why Atlanta? What makes Atlanta a prime, what made it pre-hub very attractive location for introducing a hub?
It on the surface, it doesn't look like a great location, because typically hubs pop up in places where real estate is very expensive and there's a very dense urban core where there's a lot of public transportation. So we're hitting on a lot of things where people tend to criticize Atlanta. And the other sort of negative factor in Atlanta has to do with car travel and people sort of wanting to be in their cars and having a degree of flexibility mm-hmm. that you don't expect in denser cities.
Right.
So those are all of the typical things that you'd see. But what makes Atlanta a very good spot for a hub, in spite of not being strong in those categories, is that there's a huge philanthropic community and there's a huge entrepreneurial community.
Okay.
And what happens at the intersection of those two people, if we think of philanthropic as meaning and value, and we think of entrepreneurial as money and business... So the hub exists at the intersection of money and meaning, and trying to merge those two things together so that you can fully integrate how you see your life with how you live your life and how you conduct your business. So we have 22,000 nonprofits in the state of Georgia. It's a much higher density than other locales around the globe. Uh-huh. There's 7,500 that are specifically located within the city of Atlanta, and several major organizations. I'm terrible with names. I'm going to get this wrong. Help me out, Lewis. United Way Care, and lots of substantial corporate foundations find their home here because of the substantial corporate community. So those two things combined with what I would consider to be the sort of rugged Southern individualist nature that leads to a lot of entrepreneurial activity, that makes it really ripe for a hub.
And it sounds like there are people pursuing finish lines far beyond a financial finish line. There are some causes involved in this as well, which is a great marriage of, you know, passion and being able to make a living at it, yet doing good things. So what a great environment.
Yeah.
Well, let's we're going to ask you know, Lewis and Ross to give us some details about their specific companies in 5 or 10 minutes from now. But let's go up to 40,000 feet. What are some examples of the types of companies and entrepreneurs and people who are attracted to this model that you just mentioned?
Well, we have I can talk specifically about a couple of the members that are in the hub right now and what brought them there. So there's a great group called Hope Floats. They do mobile floating medical clinics around the world.
Fantastic. I think I have heard of this.
Have you really? He's a great guy. Ken Afolian is the leader of this group, and they're based here. They are doing some work in conjunction with Lauren O'Brien at Embraced. What Lauren does is repurpose prosthetic gear and send it back out around the world. And then there's another woman who's part of our community that actually goes out looking for donations of medical equipment, so MRI machines and things like this.
Fantastic.
So the three of them have gotten together, and it runs the gamut. Two of those groups are strictly nonprofit. One of them is actually a for-profit industry that's collecting used material and then selling it at what would be considered to be a reasonable cost with some profit margin. So what you get is not necessarily a single business sector or a single business model, but people do have a tendency to collect more around a cause or a philosophy.
Sure.
Then you have companies like BDU. They work with corporate social responsibility strategy, but they also actually incubate companies within themselves. And so they're part of a group called WECO. That's a way, if you took LinkedIn and applied it to the social sector, social industries, that's not the right word for it, but it's your dry cleaner, right, your barista at the coffee shop. How do you build a series of recommendations for people that you run into every day so that you're not on Facebook saying that you like Starbucks? You're on WECO saying, I like this barista at this Starbucks because they do this for me. So it's sort of an online resume.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Well, when I visited, it was my first time and still my only time. I look forward to coming back, particularly some of your events. I can't get out of my mind, one entire wall is whiteboard, and it was filled with writing and ideas and diagrams, and I don't know who did it, but it didn't matter. I was impressed. Maybe one of our two guests here was doing it. But
it was.
Now, my question coming away was, did you put that up day one? And it's never been touched, and it's just impressive. Or is this the sort of thing I might expect to see on a regular basis, a group of people huddled around that whiteboard just doing pure, unadulterated whiteboard brainstorming?
I would say everybody in this room that's here from the hub has had some time at that whiteboard. Okay. What you saw that day was part of Triplingo's process. They were getting ready for their launch and doing some great stuff, and Ross can explain a little bit more about that. But Lewis and I have a team that we meet with once a week, and we have a tendency to migrate toward the whiteboards. Ideally, they get cleaned off at the end of every day, and something new happens the next day.
Yeah.
So what you saw might have been 24 hours old at the most.
Wow.
But it's a great encourager of sort of transparency around ideas, and I like it when people leave their things up because it gives everybody else in the space a view into, well, who's doing that? And that looks really interesting, and that looks totally different from what I do, and tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, and point six on the fourth section of the board is something my company is involved with. Maybe I should get to know them.
So, exactly.
I just like the energy. Walking in and seeing people, you know, some are at the coffee machine, some are at the water cooler, some are huddled around a desk, some are up on the whiteboard. I mean, that is just an energy that is spun off that makes me motivated to get my job done on that.
Oh, that's fantastic. We try really hard to provide enough spatial diversity in the location so that if you want to be quiet and you want to sort of get your head down and get a lot of work done. I think of a writer that came last summer and spent 3 months huddled in a corner banging away at a book on sustainability. We like to provide that, but we also like to provide this opportunity for collision so that when you do get up, you know, when I worked in my studio by myself and I got up and I looked around, I thought, oh, there's nobody here and I need somebody to talk to you for 5 minutes.
Yeah, just a break.
Yeah. So we try to provide that, and we provide enough flexibility in the space so that people who are more peripatetic, like I might be, I typically start out at one place in the morning. I sit a different place in the afternoon. Yeah. Then I might break for an event. And then after the event is over, I'm in a totally different place doing my daily wrap up. So.
Fantastic. Well, let's get down to the weeds for just a few minutes. How can a person find out more about the Hub? Can I drop in and observe? And if I want to become a part, I guess there's a membership process. So please tell our listeners how they can get engaged with you.
How do they join the Hub? So there's a couple of different ways. I would love it for anybody to drop in. We're open from 9 to 6, Monday through Friday.
And your address?
It is 1375 Spring Street, which is in the block between 17th and 18th Streets, which Spring Street's a one-way, so don't forget. and we're right across from Center for Puppetry Arts.
And across from my favorite restaurant in Atlanta.
NAM.
Love NAM.
Oh, fantastic Thai food.
Best Thai food in the country.
And the nicest people who own it.
They are wonderful.
They're fantastic. We're within walking distance of most of Midtown and Atlantic Station for the more urbanly adventurous of you. And we're just about to put a bike rack in, so feel free to bike over. And we're about a half block away from the Arts Center station of MARTA.
Okay.
But yes, feel free to drop in. You can always check out our Facebook page. We tend to publicize events. Our last-minute publicity mostly happens through social media channels.
Okay.
With our Facebook page at Hub Atlanta, and then our Twitter account, which is Hub ATL. So just H-U-B-A-T-L. And you'll see a lot of things there. But if you are interested, you can drop us an email at atlanta.hosts@the-hub.net. And we're happy to send you information and invite you over for coffee and tell you all about what we
Fantastic.
Do.
Fantastic. Yeah. I spend so much of my life in rectangular glass and chrome boxes that I truly, truly enjoy seeing exposed brick. And some timbers and maybe some painted vent fans and all, and I mean that's the environment you have there, which I think is really, really neat. It's a pleasant break from even the studio we are in today with our bright fluorescent lights and so forth. So I think that must be part of the secret sauce as well. It's a neat, comfortable place to be in, period.
Oh, thank you. It's supposed to be, you know, part office, part studio, part atelier, part cool loft, part coffee shop. And I think as we evolve, we get closer and closer and add more things in. But yeah, we have sort of a funky, relaxed vibe right now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk to one of your members.
All right.
Let's move over to Ross Rankin. And Ross, I didn't realize until yesterday that to our podcast listeners who may be listening in a different time and space than today, but we're recording this on May 6th, so yesterday was Cinco de Mayo, 2011. That's an important date for your company. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Trip Lingo and why Cinco de Mayo will be a date you'll never forget.
Okay. Trip Lingo is language learning for travelers. So the idea is there's a lot of different methods for language learning, but none of them are focused on travelers, and most of them are focused on fluency. So when you think about it, a traveler is thinking short term. They might be going for a week or two or maybe a month at most. They're not going to invest the 6 months, the year, to get fluent in the language. But, you know, they still want to be able to communicate. They still want to have fun. They want to interact with that culture that they traveled all that way to see. They want to be able to you know, really, truly enjoy and interact. So that's kind of the idea of Trip Lingo. So it's a smartphone application. You install it on your iPhone or Android device, and it's totally encapsulated onto the phone. So we have 1,200 phrases, 600 words. We have a word bank. We have situational categories. You can create your own customized phrase list. You rank what's important to you, so we make sure that we're just putting what you want to know on the phone. Then from there, you can obviously interact. And one of the unique things about it that also makes it different is we focus on colloquial and slang language. Mm. So, you know, the example we give, it's a difference between, excuse me, where's the bathroom, and I'm about to explode. So,
very good.
So you have a different way. Each thing that you want to communicate, you have four different ways to communicate it. If you want to be funny, if you want to be cute, if you want to flirt, if you want to be able to, you know, really show a little bit of personality when you're communicating, that's one of the things that Triplingo brings. The reason why Cinco de Mayo was so special for us is that was the product launch date. We actually have just launched our first five languages, and we had our launch party at the Hub. And that's also, I think, something that's very unique about the space, or that is unique about the space. We transformed, you know, a co-working environment to almost a lounge in about 3 hours, and, you know, had everything from, you know, sangria to beer to wine to, you know, food, and everybody was mingling. We had a video presentation. We were able to do all this, and we had a crowd of about 200 people.
Fantastic.
And we could, you know, do all that. One of the things about also being a startup is you have very limited funds. So we were able to do this on a very shoestring budget and make it look like a big production. And, you know, Michelle was instrumental in helping us nail down sponsors for it. So we got alcohol sponsors, help us, you know, get the space ready. You know, this morning I was still cleaning up. And, you know, to get all that done. And I think that's unique for even the co-working environment, especially in Atlanta. I mean, there are a lot of co-working spaces in more some of the entrepreneurial focused cities like in Austin or San Francisco. But, you know, there are a ton of startups in Atlanta, and we just don't have the same infrastructure, if you will. And so the Hub's an amazing addition to that.
What a wonderful endorsement. I get the feeling that this word incubation, when I hung my shingle in 1999, that was a good time to be involved in startups and incubators, and funds were coming in. All of that ended at 9/11. Yet it was a good memory. I get the sense that incubation is now morphing into a different form, such as the environment and the venue that we're talking about. It used to be a landlord who gave you a couple cubes, a phone, and access to the Xerox machine for 10% stock in your company. I mean, that's, I'm sort of oversimplifying it. Right. But I get the sense
maybe
that...
Maybe we should do that.
there's an idea. I get the sense that this is kind of the new incubation model, which, and from what you were saying, Ross, maybe you're experiencing some of that with or without labeling it incubation.
Yeah, you know, I started a company in 99, oddly enough, and we were incubated at ATDC. Uh-huh. Which is the Georgia Tech incubator, one of the best in the country, actually.
Right.
And they have kind of morphed their business model now that they are no longer that kind of focused incubator company anymore. Now what they do is more of a membership, it's more social, it's more event-driven. It's no longer, you know, when I went through it the first time, it was submit your business plan, go through a bunch of questions. It was like trying to get an investment, honestly.
Yes.
And you got cheap office space, you got a phone, mm-hmm. and they had venture catalysts, which were, you know, people that had been there, done that to kind of help you move forward. And now, you know, the dot-bomb bubble and, you know, everything that's happened since then, Now companies are much more bootstrapped. It's not so much I've got a business plan and an idea, I'm going to go raise $1 million. It's now I've got an idea, I'm going to find some like-minded people, I'm going to put a bunch of stuff on my credit card, and we're going to try to make some revenue. So the the model has changed, and I think that's also why I think places like the Hub actually work, because it is low cost, it is well connected. That's the other thing is we have leveraged probably just about every Hub member that would listen to us. I mean, from legal help to audio work to video work to writing, you name it, we've leveraged a ton of the membership. So those collisions have been very good to us. Excellent. So we've been amazed.
Before you knew of the Hub, how did you find out about the Hub?
Well, our first thought was, let's see if we can get space at ATDC. And they looked at us and said, the waiting list is about 9 months long.
Wow.
And we were like, yeah, that's not going to work. So we actually had a kind of another company that we're friends with that was at another co-working space in Atlanta. And they were said, come check it out. And we went in, and we really didn't like it. It was almost a room about the size that we're in. And it was literally a desk and a whiteboard. And we were like, this isn't what we were thinking when we were thinking co-working. Mm-hmm. So then we took a tour of all the facilities in Atlanta. We even went, north and south, and we really we liked the Hub. We liked its central location, mm-hmm. and we liked the people we met. Everybody else felt like they were trying to sell us something, mm-hmm. and going into the Hub, we felt like we were joining something, and that made a difference to us.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, before we transition to Lewis, tell us a little bit more about Trip Lingo for someone who's listening and says, that's exactly what I need, exactly what I've been looking for. How will they best make contact with you?
Right. You can obviously go to triplingo.com. There's huge buttons on the page to go ahead and purchase the apps. we have initially launched with another unique property of Triplingo is we are country language focused. So Mexican Spanish is different than Spain Spanish, sure. which is different than Peruvian Spanish.
Yes.
So we make sure that we localize the language content. The slang is different from country to country. The cultural context is different from country to country. So we put all that into the application. We've launched with Mexican Spanish, Brazilian Portuguese, Italian, Italy, France, French, and German. So five languages. We're going to continue to keep rolling out another five languages about every 6 weeks.
Wow.
And the price right now is $10, and it's a one-time fee, and you get all the updates, and you pay for it once, and you've got it forever. We're also doing a web product that is more focused on somebody that wants to have a little bit more immersion in the language, and we could take advantage of the more screen real estate, higher bandwidth, all that kind of stuff that you would get on a PC versus a mobile device. And some of the other things we're rolling out are specials, taking the language learning and kind of turning it on its side. We're going to release a flirting application in different languages that's just going to be focused on flirting.
Yeah,
we're actually working with an NGO here in town as well to create a more medical version of it for nurses and doctors that are going on mission trips or going crisis areas and being able to communicate.
Yeah,
so we're helping them.
I, uh,
create that language content.
One of my theories, and as Alan will tell you, every show is full of Bernie's theories. I'm going to limit this time. One of my theories is that the volunteers descending upon a disaster site sometimes become more part of the problem than their genuine, need to be there and help. And this sounds like it's one of the solutions is to increase the ability to communicate.
To communicate, yeah.
Yeah, I can see, tens of thousands of volunteers descending on Haiti, a lot of them getting in the way early on. They couldn't get through to where they felt their mission was. So, well, Ross, continued success with Triplingo. We look
Thank
forward
you.
To watching this. One thing that we offer most of our guests is we want to watch this and have you back 3 months, 6 months, 9 months to see how it's going. We look forward to seeing you mentioned in the local press and hearing great things.
Excellent. Thank you.
Let's move on to Lewis Perkins. Lewis, why don't you start out, give us a bit of a snapshot of your current venture, in addition to similar questions we asked Ross. How did you find the hub, and how have you experienced success with your personal venture in sort of integrating that and growing with the hub?
Absolutely. Thank you, Bernie. So, as I was introduced earlier, I came out of the corporate sustainability world and had been working with Mohawk Industries as their strategist around sustainability, predominantly on the commercial side of that business. And in that role, I was traveling the U.S., working with various customers and relationships that the company had, and sales reps and folks around bringing that company into deeper sustainability. And so most of my relationships really existed outside of Atlanta. But I had lived in Atlanta at that time for 16 years, mm-hmm. and had a lot of personal relationships in Atlanta. But when I left Mohawk and started my own consulting company, which is what Newhouse is a consulting group, and I work with companies around developing their sustainability mm-hmm. strategy, I knew that I needed to tap into a like-minded community, not just for business development and customers, but those who I might bring onto projects, those who I might be able to further grow with, and just participate more deeply in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And so I first found out about the hub from the BDUG fellows, and Michelle had mentioned them earlier, working in that social responsibility, corporate social responsibility space. We knew each other. And that was my first introduction to the hub. But at the time, I was one of those guys who was really locked into the coffee shop. If I wasn't on the road traveling or I wasn't working out of my house, I was like, nah, the coffee shop's a block away and I can get a lot of work done. And so that was kind of my mindset. And in fact, I didn't always get a lot of work done because the internet might be down or it might be slow. And as Michelle mentioned earlier, the machine, cappuccino machine, might espresso machine might be running while I'm on the phone.
The local junior high kids are dismissed for the day. There goes your quiet time in the corner.
Or the wonderful, community group that's meeting to talk about the garden circle and all other very important issues. But
yeah, we've all been there, done that. Yeah.
Right. And so really, my introduction into the hub was because I had joined the board of the Green Chamber of the South, which is an organization that is tasked towards connecting people to greener business. And Michelle also sits on that board. And so we got to know each other a little better through that role. And I thought, this is a really sharp individual. I should probably go hang out at the hub a little more often. And it didn't take long for me to join. So my first relationship with the hub was as member. And I started working there over a year ago and spending some time really connecting in with that community, of which many members of the Green Chamber of the South were there. And so I felt like I was finding my sustainability group locally.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, I have, at my age and experience, I've had the fun of watching a lot of things, and watching anything associated with the words green, recyclable, mm-hmm. sustainability. I remember a time when you guys were boxed in a broom closet and almost duct taped in so you couldn't get out. And I have seen that in a very short period of time. Now you are the must have for Fortune 1000 companies in the States and around the world. They must deal with this in an effective way and proactively turning it into a part of their marketing. So you certainly are living that as we speak. Mm-hmm. What are some of these specific services a company might come to you for? What would their burning platform or their need mm-hmm. be that would make your phone ring?
You know, and I appreciate you mentioning that, because sustainability has grown. I mean, I know 5 to 10 years ago, most people didn't even know what the term meant,
yes.
you know,
yes.
and an environmental strategy within a company was more around compliance, and it was more around making sure that we weren't breaking any laws.
Yes.
And over time, that has evolved as what I see is corporate social responsibility has also evolved into something that's more really, and it's not a term I've made up, but conscious capitalism, which is that we can solve social and environmental issues as a nature of our business through the work that we do, the products we make, the services we provide, et cetera. So what I do with companies is a number of things. I've played a lot of different roles. I see myself as part external chief sustainability strategist, mm-hmm. so that if somebody doesn't necessarily want to create the role internally, but they need someone to come in and help them think through some mm-hmm. of the business issues that they're facing. And that's a lot of different things. As you mentioned, marketing is obviously one, but we went through this whole phase several years ago where too many companies were jumping on the green washing,
yes.
the green bandwagon.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And as a result of that, now I think we're looking at, and BP is a great example of a company who really has witnessed that their brand was pretty strong around environmental strategy, but they actually had an incident occur that set
yes.
them way back. And so now it's really about authentically creating strategies inside the company that are going to solve some of these problems, or that you don't create them in the first mm-hmm. place. So that's what I do, really, is to help companies think through those issues. And because it is such a young area of business for many companies, a lot of it is tackling the low-hanging fruit. You know, mm-hmm. what can we do that fits your current needs, your current budget? And then what are your vendors looking for, your supply chain? What are your customers looking for? You know, let's not put a stamp on you that's not going to fit what your company needs are. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to start with this? And figuring out that roadmap.
I think most of the listeners to our show will know that Mohawk is a part of the carpet industry, which is huge in Georgia. Without a doubt, there isn't even a close second place. Without a doubt, the most impressive green/environmental/sustainability speech I have ever heard, you know who the gentleman I'm about to mm-hmm. mention, Ray Anderson from Interface down in LaGrange, Georgia. My personal paradigms were shifted
mm-hmm.
because he gave all the warm, fuzzy things I thought he would give. Then he backed it up with the facts, and then he looks at the audience and says, and we don't do this just to be popular. We have high ROI on everything we have done. We have saved tons of money with regards to, you know, putting these programs in, which many people from the outside might think we're doing for, you know, just good general social, you know, community marketing reasons. He says, absolutely not. These are hard ROI projects we've done. Blew me away. Mm-hmm. And then he went on to describe them.
Absolutely,
as well.
Ray is a great example in corporate America on how a leader, he calls it his spear in the chest experience,
yes.
which is that he read Paul Hawkins' Ecology of Commerce, and yes. then all of a sudden realized that he was one of the capitalist corporate culprits of
yes.
Of doing not the right thing for the planet. But I think what's great about the carpet industry as a whole is it isn't one that you would immediately peg and say that's a green industry.
Exactly.
And it has dramatically reduced the amount of water that it takes, reducing PVC from materials, making sure that the recycling and reclaiming process of carpet to reduce numbers from landfill. I mean, it goes, the carpet made yeah. from PET, recycled soda bottles. I mean, it goes on and on as to what
yes.
that whole industry has done. And certainly Ray Anderson and Interface have been a leader in that. And it's been also rewarding to watch the whole industry walk along with that as well.
Yeah.
So I feel honored that I got to spend some years in that area.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I could not have said it better. You don't automatically go there when you're looking for leadership, and yet there it is, LaGrange, Georgia. People are coming from all over the world to visit that facility and hear about this.
And to kind of pull back into the hub a little bit around this, I think one of the things that I admire most about Ray Anderson's leadership is that he knew that he was stepping into a world that he didn't know a lot about, and he
yes.
looked around him and he said, who are the people that know something about this? And it was Janine Benyus with biomimicry, and it was Paul Hawken with sustainable design, and it was William McDonough with sustainable design, and it was Amory Lovins with energy efficiency. And he picked a dream team, and he brought them to LaGrange, and he said, these are the people that are the leaders in this topic of sustainability in this country.
Yeah.
And what I see at the Hub is really the opportunity to do that, and something that I hope we'll talk about a little bit is some of the things we've been incubating as a team, where you can look around the room and you can say, this is someone who knows something about technology that I don't, or this mm-hmm. is someone who knows about social investment that I don't understand,
okay.
and pull that together.
before we return to a bit more discussion concerning the Hub, which, of course, is the theme today, Lewis, how can people best get in contact with you if they want to follow up? If we have a listener who's right on the edge and they're saying we need to start our own efforts in these disciplines, how would they contact you?
Well, the best way to reach me is Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, at lewisperkins.com, which is my email address, and the website as well has a lot of the information about my company and my business, as well as I write a blog for Fast Company magazine called Semantics of Sustainability. Okay. So if you want to read about how I think in this world, then that's a great place to go, either to the Fast Company website or to my site where I repost it. And that's the best way to reach me, really, is through those websites.
Okay. Let's get the Atlanta Business Radio X crystal ball out, and let's do some predicting, some forecasting. Let me go back to you, Michelle. What can we expect to begin hearing about the Hub 2 years from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now? Will there be more hubs in Atlanta, or will you grow the mothership on 17th Street?
We have a pretty ambitious plan for what we'd like to do in Atlanta with the Hub, and it mimics a model that you'll see in San Francisco, but not really in any of the other cities that the Hub exists in. Because Atlanta is geographically spread out,
right,
we would like
right.
to do the same thing with the Hub community. And okay. so we see something that's maybe 5 to 7 locations, maybe more than that, spread out over the network. So one toward the south, one toward the west, one toward the east, one toward the north. We know that there are already co-working spaces, and we want to work in partnership with them where it's appropriate. But we see the ability, you know, Lewis was talking about liking to be at his coffee shop because it was close to him. And,
right.
you know, people like that, and we understand that.
Right.
And we want to bring what we have to someplace close enough to them that they feel comfortable with it. But then to look at what can a hub in Decatur bring to a hub in Midtown? What can a hub in Midtown bring to a hub that's maybe part of the redevelopment of Aerotropolis or Fort McPherson
right.
or something like
right.
that?
Right.
And how do we use the relationships that we have with the larger city to leverage the business opportunities for the members of that community? So let's say each hub has a, you know, that might max out at a membership of between 3,000 and 4,000 people circling around it. So then you're looking at somewhere between 15,000 and 30,000 people in this larger hub network inside the city of 4 million.
That is so cool. Hmm? I've looked at this wrong. When we started 50 minutes ago, I was looking at it as a coffee shop, which happened to have business services.
Mm.
You are hugely networked community business services where you happen to be able to get a cup of coffee if you want it. I clearly see that now.
Yes.
I really do. And
we lure people in with the coffee, and then we offer them a set of really high-powered relationships.
Yeah. Well, quote, unquote, it's all about networking today. I'm not sure that it will ever replace slick Madison Avenue marketing and messaging and great websites and all, but truly huge amounts of business are being done out of having been created in a relationship and environment such as you're mentioning. So I think you're riding a trend. I don't know if you guys are seeing it from a side of the table. I am not. But you're obviously participating in it. One question I have, as the economy picks up and as people are able to return to quote-unquote corporate jobs, does that diminish the role of the Hub in similar environments, or is it here to stay? This is the way business is going to be created and done.
This is Lewis again. One thing I'll say about that is prior to my work with Mohawk, I was working at the Clean Air Campaign, and one of the things I know as a region in Atlanta that we're so dedicated to is transportation demand management.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I know that companies are also dedicated to is reducing their impact on the region, and that it behooves them to be a part of a cleaner and more healthy and vital community in order to recruit new employees and management,
yes,
as well as other investors as well. I see that what's going to happen more and more is that organizations such as the Hub will be able to partner with companies where someone who may live out in Decatur, you know, and would commute in to downtown Atlanta or to the north part of Atlanta would maybe have an opportunity to work a day or two out of the Hub because their company has a partnership with that. And so that we see more and more where people are really looking at diversifying their work days and their work hours and doing it in different locations, because we all know that working out of the house can be a real issue. And then if you have children or you have pets or you have delivery people coming and going, you know, it's hard to work out of the house. And so what this provides is really a hybrid opportunity. So I think the future is going to have a lot more corporate partnerships to organizations such as the Hub.
We do already have a couple of organizations like Better World Books that is headquartered in Alpharetta, mm-hmm. and Grey Guys Ventures, which is headquartered just north of town near...
Out 85.
Yeah. Out 85 mm-hmm. near Claremont or North Druid Hills. I can't remember. It's mm-hmm. Century Plaza, Century City, whatever it's mm-hmm. called. And both of those groups came to us partially because they're philosophically aligned with us in the social mm-hmm. enterprise sector, but also they saw it as an opportunity to provide their employees with diversity in their work week and Fantastic. To get their employees out of specifically their place and into somebody else's place to be exposed to other people and other ideas and other resources. But that also works in conjunction with, I had a great conversation with a guy from Coca-Cola the other day who said, I see the Hub as an opportunity to provide the more radical entrepreneurial thinkers inside my organization with an opportunity that if I don't give it to them, they will leave to go and look for it.
That makes so much sense. I'm flashing back to, this was before you guys were born, IBM, mainframe. Mm-hmm. What's the town in New York they're at? I forget. Anyhow.
Armonk,
New York. Thank you.
Sarah.
Tried, and people were gnashing teeth, and people were getting fired. They could not produce a PC. This was, you know, mainframe territory and all. So they have to break off some of their best people and send them to Boca Raton. That was, in my memory, was the first use of the word skunk works, to give them the environment away from next quarter's earnings selling mainframes. And they finally got over the hurdle. They wouldn't, if I guess a lot of stories are like fish stories, they get a little bigger as they're told over and over, but wouldn't let them call back to Armonk, New York. They cut them off and wouldn't let them return to their families, I guess, until they had a laptop or a PC at that time, which morphed into a laptop. And it occurs to me that, Alan, you will love this. One of the benefits of an offsite is that it's off-site, right? You're a new environment and, you know, away from the phones and away from the pressures, you know, sort of out of sight, out of mind for a day or a weekend. And so what I'm hearing is that a traditional company, you know, maybe millions and millions of, you know, volume and, you know, thousands of employees, they're going to be seeking out places like this to break some people out and make something new, a fresh start of a part of their division or something.
Absolutely. I think there's two things at play. One is that as people, we crave a lot of variety. And as people have gained more financial independence in the last 30 or so years, our idea of what that means to us is more choice and more flexibility in how our day-to-day lives go. This is sort of the idea that the 4-hour work week is predicated on, is that yeah. we could be doing our job from anywhere. So if you haven't gotten to the point where you literally could be anywhere on the globe, your office providing you with a place to go that's just different from where you normally go. It gives you a very small piece of that that can provide what I would call a psychic relief from the monotony of like, oh, yeah, I'm back here. Yeah, okay, great.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other thing that is, as innovation comes to the top of the priority list for companies, I think they realize, I want to say it's Einstein who says, the thinking that you had yesterday won't produce the solution for the problem that you have today.
There you go.
It's what produced the problem that you have, probably. Yes. Yeah. And so I think as innovation moves up that priority list, lots of companies really understand that this siloed method of business that we've had for a long time, and for good reasons, to protect IP and, mm-hmm. and to mm-hmm. try to focus our people, that's not what's going to produce those innovative ideas.
Well, my son... and his generation, he's 22 years old. Let me preface it by saying my father worked for the same employer for 30 years. My son, I am told, if he is statistically in the middle of the bell-shaped curve, will expect to work for 12 to 15 employers through his career. So the whole idea of, you know, the corporate, you know, cradle-to-grave parent who takes care of me and gives me upward mobility, and occasionally I have to move to make that happen, it's not going to be there anyhow. So, I mean, this whole idea of a job and working for a company, it's what we're seeing being perhaps forced upon us by a recession and some displaced people and some people in transition, there might be a lot of permanency within that. Do you agree with that, seeing it from your view?
I think that's absolutely true, and I know personally that's been my experience. Is I've worked through sort of an evolution of an industry that didn't really exist when I got into it, mm-hmm. and when I went to business school 12 years ago, I came in saying I want to do good for companies, and what does that look like? And everyone mm-hmm. said, "Oh, well, you want to run a corporate foundation?" And I said, "No, that's not exactly what I'm thinking." You know, yeah. And so I've had to evolve as this whole industry around corporate social responsibility and sustainability has evolved, which has put me in a lot of different roles over time, some in-house and some as a consultant. But I definitely see that evolution occurring. And when we were talking about sort of the corporate participation in that, I see spaces like the Hub are such a great place for cross-pollination, where people who have these diversified backgrounds are all in a room together. So the benefit of an offsite is to be offsite, but then it's just you and your company.
Yes.
But if you're in a space like the Hub, then you may have an opportunity, as I said, to cross-pollinate with people who have different diverse backgrounds.
Makes sense. I want to come. But you'll have to kick me out, because I'll spend the first week just going around and bothering people and finding out who they are and what do you do and tell me more. And that's
well, I think as long as you're tweeting about it and mentioning it on Facebook, nobody's bothered by it.
Very good. Well, we have to have all of you back, both as representatives of the Hub and, of course, to find out more about your individual companies. This has been great. Our listeners have learned a lot. I want to spend some more time, and maybe I can get a discount on membership now that you've...
No,
I thought she was saying we don't give discounts. But no, what a wonderful story. Now, the thing I would hate the most is if you go back to our parking lot and you're saying, I wish Bernie would have asked this, or I wish we'd have had time to mention that. Is there something that we missed that you think our listeners would be interested in?
Yeah, I'd love to give a great example of how I think the Hub works at its best. And
sure.
When I was describing earlier how I came in as the sustainability consultant who was looking for a shared workspace and you know, looking for his tribe. But at the same time, a year ago, I had launched a website, which really was a self-expression based on a trend that I was seeing globally around the role of women and girls in global solution and educating women and girls. And I was looking towards organizations like Nike and Coca-Cola, who are investing in the Girl Effect, or Coca-Cola has its 5 and 20 campaign that they've launched. And so I started to think, what does this really look like? And I launched a blog around this idea. Over time, it became apparent that the women and men I was interviewing for this blog were through video were now wanting to connect with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had this thought that perhaps there's a way technology can facilitate this, so that Lewis Perkins doesn't have to sit in the middle of this conversation
yes.
and you rely on me to answer my email and connect to you,
yes.
but actually technology can find like-minded people who are working within sub-tribes of this issue of women and girls. And so... working in the Hub, I automatically had a whole team ready around me that I could plug into. And so Michelle and another very brilliant person, Paula Collins, has been working with us and comes as a veteran of the dot-com world, having been an early pioneer with U.S. Web and was a partner at U.S. Web at its origin, has joined us as well. And we started whiteboarding one day. And mm-hmm. I said, can I just have a couple minutes of your time to talk through something? and we started whiteboarding, this infamous whiteboard you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And fast forward over the course of several months, we've put together a very solid plan that we're now taking out to folks who are potential advisors, partners, investors, and are growing this concept around how technology could now start connecting people within this community of, in this case, women and girls, globally, and educating women and girls and to create social change across different communities.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's such a great example of how, had I been in the coffee shop just sitting here with this idea, I might not have found that like-minded community and that team to put together and move this so rapidly forward.
Excellent. Excellent illustration.
The other thing that's happening as part of that team, so I was at Triplingo's launch party last night,
uh-huh.
and somebody said, oh, Michelle, I saw you in the conference room the other day meeting with a different group of people. What's going on? And so I mentioned this project that I've been working on with Lewis, and they said, oh, that's so interesting. Our consulting group, and their consulting group comes and uses the Hub conference room once mm-hmm. or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
They said, we focus on sort of innovation within corporate social responsibility. And we'd be really interested in talking to you. I haven't even shared this with Lewis yet.
This is exciting.
This is real-time reporting,
real
listeners.
Time. We'd be interested in talking to you and your team about how this tool works. Perhaps we could go out and help you find a really great pilot project for it, which is actually what we're looking for. And so it's really... what happens at the Hub is there's a certain transparency around your physical activity that sort of asks people to ask questions about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's the thing that moves you forward, as long Fantastic. As you just have to be willing to answer. That's the thing.
Well, one last time, let's remind our listeners your location, your website, the phone number. Let's make it easy for them to hear this and follow up with you.
So our location is 1375 Spring Street, which is just north of 17th okay. on Spring. Our website is www.hubatlanta.com, and you can see a lot of information about our activities and events and members. And I think there's even a way that you can make an inquiry about how to join, and we'll okay. electronically send you all the information about cost. If you call and or email and mention Business Radio X, on the fly, I'm going to give you the Bernie deal, so we'll give you a discount.
The Ginsu knives, is that our offer today, Ellen?
Exactly. We'll throw in something with it, maybe leftover beer from Tripling.
I don't think they
party.
Remember Ginsu knives. That was from the 70s.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Good we were here then. and the best way to contact us is always by email at atlanta.hosts@the-hub.net. And
okay.
I'm embarrassed to say I don't know our telephone number. but I know it's on the front page of our website.
It's on the website. That's yeah. where everybody's going. They're going to go there anyhow because they want to see it.
Yeah,
so.
I don't call us.
Yeah. Well, thanks again to each of you, Ross, Lewis, Michelle. Thanks for giving our listeners a great, great show. A lot of information and a little bit of fun along the way. Thanks again to our listeners for joining us on Accelerator Avenue. Thank you, Alan, for making us sound so good today. Accelerator Avenue broadcasts two live shows each Friday, one at noon and our second show at 2 p.m. And, of course, podcasts are available 24/7, 365 on our website, which is acceleratoravenue.businessradiox.com. And while there, please check out all the other great shows on Business Radio X. So until we're together again, this is your host, Bernie Wolford. Have a great weekend, everyone.